Located on Osaka Bay in central Japan, Kobe is known for its famous marbled beef and its picturesque harbor framed by mountains. The Mount Rocco Mountains offer panoramic views of the port, and the outdoor hot springs of Erima Onsen are beyond Mount Rocco Hills. Kobe is a beautiful city with many things to do. Devastation struck the city on January 17, 1995, when the Great Hanshin Earthquake hit at 5:46 a.m. It lasted about 20 seconds and registered as a 7.3 on the Richter scale. Kobe was the closest city to the epicenter and experienced the strongest tremors. Approximately 6,434 people died as a result of this earthquake, with about 4,600 of the casualties being residents of Kobe. Nearly 400,000 buildings were irreparably damaged by the earthquake, along with numerous elevated roads and rail bridges. The quake triggered approximately 300 fires that raged over large parts of the city. Aftershocks lasted several days, 74 of them strong enough to be felt, and residents feared returning home. Aftershocks disrupted water, electricity, and gas supplies. The majority of deaths occurred in cities and suburbs. A total of 68 children under the age of 18 were orphaned, while 332 children lost one parent. While the country was still rebuilding and healing from one of the deadliest earthquakes, another unexpected tragedy loomed over the city of Kobe. From February to May 1997, the city experienced a wave of attacks and killings by a hammer-wielding assailant targeting young children. The case shocked the nation as the perpetrator was only 14 years old at the time. It remains one of Japan's most notorious crimes today. Welcome to another episode of Crimson Sin with Tamsin Lee. I am your host, Tamsin Lee. Full show notes and sources can be found in the description. Today's case brings us to Kobe, Japan, and is a precursor to the Sasebo incident that I covered in the last episode. The murders in this case raised serious questions about mental health care for young people and the impact of violence in media on impressionable minds. It's a tragic and disturbing story that serves as a grim reminder of the complexities of human psychology and the devastating consequences of unchecked violence. This case also saw the age of culpability lower to age 14. So how gruesome and shocking can a 14-year-old murderer be? Let's take a look. The first known victims of the teenager occurred on February 10th, 1997, when he attacked two schoolgirls with a hammer. The girls escaped their assailant with injuries and both survived. The two girls did not know who their attacker was, but indicated that it was a student. A month later, on March 15, 1997, the perpetrator would strike again. The assailant came across 10-year-old Ayaka Yamashita, hitting the child on the head from behind with his hammer. Some accounts say it was a steel pipe, others say it was a hammer. The same day, not even a mile away, he stabbed a 9-year-old girl in the stomach with a knife. The girl managed to escape and survive the attack, but was also unable to identify the person. Unfortunately, Ayaka Yamashita was not so lucky. The child was in the hospital and succumbed to his injuries 12 days later. What brought this case international notoriety for its brutality and gruesome nature and caused widespread panic was his last victim, 11-year-old Jun Hase. Jun Hase was a mentally disabled boy who attended Tomogaoka junior high school, and was reported missing on May 24, 1997. On the morning of May 27, 1997, the janitor at the school discovered something quite disturbing. Mere hours before students would arrive, he found June Hase's head impaled on the school gates. The sight was pretty graphic. His eye sockets were empty with X-cut marks, and his mouth was slit from ear to ear. Inside the child's mouth, placed on his tongue, was a handwritten letter addressed to authorities. The letter read, "This is the beginning of the game. Try to stop me if you can, you stupid police. I desperately want to see people die. It is a thrill for me to commit murder. A bloody judgment is needed for my years of great bitterness." He signed the letter with the name Sakakibara. Japanese authorities were familiar with the Zodiac Killer in America, and with leaving this note, they felt whoever did this took inspiration from the unsolved serial murder case. Investigators suspected the perpetrator had hoped the boy's head would have been discovered by students, parents, and school staff, causing widespread fear and panic. While the child's remains were not necessarily discovered in the manner the killer probably planned on them being found, residents were still deeply afraid and refused to go out at night. The janitor told police that in the week preceding the discovery, he found the remains of two mutilated cats with their paws cut off and several dead pigeons on the school grounds. June Hase's body was later found hidden underneath a house in the area. From the autopsy conducted, it was concluded the perpetrator strangled June to death, then removed his head with an instrument such as a hacksaw. Authorities had nothing to go on besides the letter they found. They had no witnesses to the murder, and no one saw the killer place the victim's head on the school gate. Japanese police also had no clue as to what the motive was behind the killing. But it wasn't long before Sakakibara wrote again. On June 6, 1997, the murderer sent a letter to the Kobe Shinbun newspaper, taking responsibility for the strangulation and decapitation of June Hase. The perpetrator also threatened that more killings would soon follow. The letter was postmarked June 3rd and delivered in a brown envelope, and did not contain a return name or address. The letter was 3 pages long, was written in the same red ink as the one found in June's mouth, and was signed Sakakibara Saito. The name the killer gave contains a variety of words in the Japanese language, such as alcohol, fight, saint, rose, and devil. The letter began, "Now it's the beginning of a game," and continued with, "I am putting my life at stake for the sake of this game. If I'm caught, I'll probably be hanged. Police should be angrier and more tenacious in pursuing me. It's only when I kill, I am liberated from the constant hatred that I suffer, and that I can attain peace. It is only when I give pain to people that I can ease my own pain." The letter also mentioned the Japanese educational system, calling it compulsory education that formed me an invisible person. The perpetrator wanted more attention on himself and his crime. During the initial press conference on the incident, the Japanese media was frightened and allegedly called the murderer Unibara, which translates to Demon's Rose. This mix-up angered the perpetrator, and he was going to let them know. He wrote to the station again with a threat. "From now on, if you misread my name or spoil my mood, I will kill 3 vegetables a week. If you think I can only kill children, you are greatly mistaken. For many, it seemed as though Sakakibara wanted and craved more recognition and attention for his crimes. It was heavily speculated that he wanted to imitate the Zodiac Killer and wanted to be immortalized the way other serial killers were by society and the media. But just as quickly as the serial killer came onto the scene, he was captured. Only 1 month after the grisly discovery of Jun Hase's head on the gates of the school, authorities made an arrest. On June 28, 1997, authorities arrested and questioned a 14-year-old junior high school student in connection with the murder. Azuma Shinchiryo was born on July 7, 1982, and had been viewed negatively throughout his neighborhood from a very young age. He appeared to have a fascination with death after being introduced to it in 1993 when his grandmother passed away. Japanese laws did not allow minors' names to be released by the press, so the suspect was originally only referred to as Boy A in articles and news reports. However, one Japanese tabloid still published the boy's real name and his picture. Azuma Shinchiryo confessed to attacking 3 schoolgirls in February and murdering Ayaka Yamashita. After the attack on Ayaka, Azuma wrote in his diary, "I carried out sacred experiments today to confirm how fragile human beings are. I brought the hammer down when the girl turned to face me. I think I hit her a few times, but I was too excited to remember." On November 23rd, he also wrote, "This morning my mom told me, 'Poor girl, the girl attacked seems to have died. There is no sign of me being caught. I thank you, Bamoi Dokishin, for this. Please continue to protect me." Investigators were unable to learn the identity or the meaning of this god Azuma referred to, and it still remains a mystery to this day. There is not a lot of information about the killer's childhood. The only thing that was made known was his enjoyment in torturing and killing small animals before moving on to children. It was also made known that he referred to others as vegetables because of something his parents had told him. As they once said, if you are nervous at your athletic meet, picture the people around you as vegetables. Other things that investigators found in the diary included, "When I advanced to junior high school, I had already become bored of killing cats, and gradually found myself fantasizing about how it would feel to murder human beings like me." Azuma further admitted to mutilating a variety of different animals, with one referring to a time in his childhood when he lined up a row of frogs in a street and ran them over with his bicycle. He also wrote about his time spent mutilating cats, decapitating pigeons, and dissecting frogs and snails, explaining this behavior away as an interest and trying to understand death. Azuma further wrote of his enjoyment of playing with dangerous objects, something he did as early as elementary school. "I can ease my irritation when I'm holding a survival knife or spinning scissors like a pistol." Social workers regarded Azuma to be mentally unstable. However, his mother continued to pressure him into taking and passing the entrance exams that were required to enter a prestigious school. This pressure the young boy felt only added to his aggressive and violent inclinations, affecting his interactions with those around him as well as causing him to become bitter. After Azuma's arrest, authorities discovered thousands of comic books and pornographic videos, some of which suggested it may have fueled his homicidal killing spree. Japanese politician Shizuka Kame was quick to blame society and the media for Azuma's actions and called for a restriction on this type of content, stating, "Movies lacking any literary or educational merit, made for just showing cruel scenes. Adults should be blamed for this." And continued, "The incident gives adults the chance to rethink the policy of self-imposed restrictions on these films and whether they should allow them, just because they are profitable. While politicians argued over whether or not media and society were the root cause of Azuma's actions, others believed the boy was wrongfully accused. A lawyer with experience with many false accusation cases named Shojiro Goto and the former principal Nobuyoshi Iwata of the junior high school Azuma attended believed the boy was wrongfully accused and pointed out several contradictions in the investigators' statements. One such statement was that authorities initially believed the assailant to be left-handed, but Azuma was right-handed. The case was complex still, as Azuma confessed to the crimes, but used elaborate figures of speech and similes. He also claimed to do things that would be completely impossible for a 14-year-old to do. Still, he confessed to the crimes committed, and because he was under the age of 16, he could not be tried as an adult. Therefore, he was sentenced to a youth reformatory for treatment. Because he could not be tried as an adult and practically escaped culpability, there was a public outcry over lowering the age of criminal responsibility. The new age would not go into effect until 2000, when the age was lowered from 16 to 14 years old. But then the Sasebo incident occurred in June 2004, where a new discussion was prompted for dropping the age again. However, the age of criminal responsibility still remains at 14 years old in Japan today. In 2002, Azuma's mother visited her son and asked if he really committed the crimes that he confessed to. Again, he confirmed he was the murderer. On March 11, 2004, the Japanese Ministry of Justice publicly announced that 21-year-old Azuma Shinichiro would be released on a provisional basis and would be fully released on January 1, 2005. Due to the government taking this unprecedented step of notifying the public, many suspected that the perpetrator was not fit for release and should have been transferred to prison to serve out the remainder of his sentence. But this didn't happen. He was judged to be cured of his sexual sadism and compulsion to kill and released from a medical juvenile reformatory on parole in 2004 after serving 6 years and 9 months. Upon his release, the public and victims' families were notified of Azuma's whereabouts. But after 2004, he was no longer required to report his location, so he disappeared. But this wasn't the last time anyone would hear from him. In 2015, he was featured in the news again, this time for the release of his controversial memoir. On June 10, 2015, at 32 years old, Azuma released an autobiography through Ota Publishing entitled Zeka. The book recollected his crimes and times in prison. It reportedly also vividly recounts the murder of Jun Hase, with details that had never been reported by the media. In the book, Azuma claimed to have strangled and decapitated the victim on the slopes of a nearby mountain using a handsaw. He further claimed that he carried the boy's body into the bathroom of his home, locking the door and committing a deed far more heinous than murder. When Jun Hase's head was discovered, authorities found semen in his mouth. Around 10,000 copies of the first edition of Zeka were published, and none of the victims' families were ever told beforehand. Satoshi Oka, president of Ota Publishing, stated, "We have never had the opportunity to read the personal account of a juvenile criminal at this level. Although I understand this book will receive a great deal of criticism, I believe that the book details events that speak to issues of juvenile criminal accountability, still relevant today." The families of the victims and many advocates for the victims objected to Zecca and attempted to keep the book from being published, but it was still released. One bookstore chain refused to sell the book in its stores, but even with this hurdle, it still became an instant success and quickly reached the top of Japanese bestseller lists. The royalties from the book were paid to the perpetrator, which further angered the families of the victims. The book sold out its entire 100,000 initial run in just 3 weeks, earning the Kobe child killer an estimated $93,000. Reportedly, Sakakibara sent a personal note of apology attached to a copy of this book, intended to be sent to the members of the victims' families. This sounds so horrible. It sounds like he's trying to make amends, but at the same time, it's kind of a slap in the face for the victims' families because you're sending them a book that basically recounts exactly how your child died. No one wants to know all of the details about that. Allegedly, Azuma stated that he now realizes the gravity of the crimes he committed as a teenager. Jun Hase's father stated, "I don't know if the murderer of our child published this book to further extend our endless suffering. It shows he doesn't really feel bad about what he did. I wish this book would be pulled immediately and that no more copies would be printed." Following this controversy, there were growing calls for Japan to introduce legislation similar to the United States' Son of Sam law, which prevents criminals and ex-convicts from profiting from the publicity of their crimes. But the attention that Zecca garnered have not been enough for Azuma. Several months after the release of his memoir, he set up a vanity website. There is no confirmation that the website is the work of the Kobe child murderer. However, the weekly magazine Shukan Bunshun stated that they received a letter from Azuma on August 31st, detailing how he came to release the memoir and went on to set up a homepage and providing the URL to this website. The website declares that it will be the sole source of information about Sakakibara, since he is not a user of online social networking. The main website's homepage, I cannot pronounce the name of it, and I'm sorry, I tried and I sound too silly to even put it in here, but the Japanese name translates to the unbearable transparency of being. The gallery section features a bizarre picture of a naked man wearing a mask, whom he suggests is himself. The website claims to feature works of art by the child killer, reportedly pictures and illustrations of slugs. The website also remarks on his favorite books. Something that is missing from the website that many have noted is an apology or any type of declaration of regret to the families of his victims. Experts believe that this demonstrates his conceit and desire for public attention, as he tries to interact with people who can send comments to him through an email address provided on his website. But yet again, he faded away from the public eye. The Kobe child murderer, Sakakibara, or Azuma Shinichiro, whatever you want to call him, Boy A, sent shockwaves throughout Japanese society because his actions were so similar to the Zodiac Killer of the San Francisco Bay Area. Some publications would even refer to him as Zodiac the Third. Even though he was sentenced and served that time for his crimes, there has been a lot of debate as to whether or not justice had been served. So what did you think of today's case? Do you think justice was served? Thank you for listening and your support. Stay safe, and I will see you for the next episode. Bye!